The first aliyah of Parshas Vayeshev begins with the name of the Parsha, Vayeshev Yaakov Be'eretz Megorei Aviv Be'eretz Canaan, and Rashi in the second pasuk quotes from the Medrash that there's something negative being conveyed there, that Yaakov's sitting, being settled, implies that he wanted something somewhat inappropriate. Bikesh Yaakov Leishev Beshalva, that Yaakov wanted to sit in peace, which seems like a good thing. But Kafetz Alav Rogzo Shel Yosef, he ended up having to deal with all of the issues involving Yosef. And Rashi continued, Tzadikim Mevakim Leishev Beshalva, Tzadikim think that's okay, that they can sit in peace. What happens? Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lodayin L'tzadikim Hashem Mesukim Olam Haba. It's not enough for you that you have Olam Haba waiting. El Mevakshim Leishev Beshalva Ba'olam Hazeh. You think you can sit peacefully in this world? It's a very surprising comment. And perhaps it can be understood in light of other ideas that connect to this episode. The Gemara tells us in Shabbos on Daf Yud Amud Aleph that Yaakov was to be criticized for showing favoritism to Yosef, as we see in this aliyah, and the special gift that he gave him of Aksonis Pasim. The Gemara says that because of that small gift, everything went wrong, and the Jews ended up being taken into slavery. And we know that that's not the only cause of the Shibud, of the reason that the Jews were brought into slavery. And yet, apparently, Chazal are sending some message here about the connection to the treatment that Yaakov gave to Yosef and the dissent that was caused among his brothers. And perhaps the idea here is that the notion of sitting b'shalva, in a negative sense, refers to the belief that people have that they can not be concerned with the interpretation that others bring to events. And Yaakov may have felt that he was justified in giving Yosef this gift and didn't think that he had to worry about the fact that this would provoke jealousy among the brothers. And the notion that this is a concern is spread throughout Chazal. So, for example, when we read about the Churban, the Gemaras and Maseches Gittin that tell us about the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa and the embarrassment and the fighting that emerged from that story, so the Gemara introduces the story with the pasuk Ashrei Adam Mefachei Tamid. And Tosfos asks, what exactly is the message here? Is it really appropriate for a person to be always afraid? Don't we have the notion that if somebody is overly fearful, that implies a lack of faith? And perhaps the idea here is that the type of fear that we're recommending and the type of shalva that we're discouraging is a proper concern and awareness for just how human beings react to events, even if there seems to be a rationale for them. Even if one might think, okay, I'm acting the way I'm entitled to act, no one should have any complaints, no one should have any jealousy, real life doesn't work out that way. And perhaps in Olam Haba, that's a perfect world, and there's no need for tzaddikim and for anyone else to worry about such things. But in this world, life is complicated. And if you're going to choose to show favoritism to one child over the other, there's going to be a negative reaction, there's going to be jealousy, and there's going to be problems. And if one is not concerned about the dignity of others, if one is quick to act in a way that causes embarrassment to others, there's going to be terrible fighting, there's going to be machlokas, there's going to be exile, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. All of this can result from a lack of concern for how human beings react, from an overly serene attitude, which perhaps is what we're talking about here when we describe shalva, a lack of awareness that even behavior that one might think is justifiable and can be explained, nonetheless can cause terrible fighting and tremendous problems ensue. And we find that there's also, in this context, the way Yosef relates to his brothers, and the Torah tells us something which seems surprising, that here Yosef, who we know to be a tzaddik, he's always referred to as such, and yet one of the first things we are told about him is that he engages in what seems to be lashon hara. Ve'yaveh Yosef es dibasam ra'ah el avihem, that Yosef brought negative reports about his brothers to his father. So this is the topic of much analysis as well. Are we to understand that Yosef, despite his famous tzidkus, engaged in lashon hara here in a prohibited fashion or in a harmful fashion? Or should we understand that perhaps this could be justified? Now, we know that when it comes to lashon hara, it's generally prohibited to speak negatively about others, but at times it's necessary. At times one has to speak up in order to bring about a necessary result, what we call toelas. And that creates an obligation to speak. And there's a sefer, the Pischei Tshuva on Aruch Chaim, it was written by one of the Dayanim in Vilna, who commented that everyone gets so worked up about the prohibition of Lashon Hara, not being nichshol in that avera and saying things that they shouldn't say, that they're not as careful of an equally important concern, that they should speak up when it's important, when it can accomplish something necessary, especially when somebody is potentially at risk. They need to be able to say something, they need to be able to speak up, and that's what we call toelas. So balancing that concern is a very significant issue, and perhaps that's what we find here also, that maybe Yosef was motivated by what we call toelas. He was looking to accomplish something necessary in terms of what he was saying to his father, and this is a subject of debate. So there are those who do indeed seem to find that what Yosef was doing was problematic. And you find critical comments about Yosef in Rashi, in the Chidushim of the Chasam Sofer, quoting from a Tanchuma, a Pnei Yoshua, and his commentary to Maseches Shabbos, and a number of others have a perspective on what Yosef was doing, that indeed it was negative, and this could have been the cause of his problems. So to understand a little bit about what's going on here, it could be that there is a insight into the whole nature of how we relate to Lashon Hara L'Toelas. That topic is, of course, a crucial topic and at the center of all of Hilchos Lashon Hara, because so much of it is this assessment, this judgment of whether what we are saying is prohibited or is necessary. And there was a discussion among the Sfarim as to what kind of a process is necessary in order to assess when it's appropriate to speak up and when it's not. And the Chafetz Chaim had a list of conditions, between 5 and 7 conditions, depending on whether we're speaking about Lashon Hara or Rechilus. And others had a much more concise approach. So, for example, the Chazon Ish is quoted as saying that the only concern we need to bring to this issue is what's being said, the toelas. If it's purposeful, so then it can be justified, and if not, not. So to understand this whole dynamic, it may require a question of what exactly is the prohibition of Lashon Hara about, and then to understand why this prohibition would be treated differently when there is toelas involved, when there is a purpose. So one possibility is to understand the prohibition of Lashon Hara as being driven by midos concerns, that the prohibition is really about what we might call in English gossip. It's about talking in a disparaging way when there is no significance, when there is no importance, there is no purpose. So if that's the case, so then the fact that Lashon Hara L'Toelas is permitted and obligatory could simply come from the fact that it's not included in the prohibition of Lashon Hara. It's not gossip. Lashon Hara, by its very nature, is that which is not purposeful. And if there is a purpose, then it's simply not included in the prohibition. Alternatively, we could say that Lashon Hara is not simply about the midos. It's not simply about the fact that one is engaging in useless gossip. It could be that Lashon Hara is defined as speaking in a way that causes harm to others or puts them at the risk of potential harm. And if that's the definition, so then when something is the toelas, it may still be included in Lashon Hara. The classic examples the Chafetz Chaim talks about, if you're going to warn somebody who's going to be involved in a shidduch that the individual is inappropriate or dangerous for them, or if somebody's about to get involved in a business deal and the person they're going to become partners with is dishonest, so then they need to be warned. In those situations, you are hurting the person you're talking about, the person who's going to lose out on the shidduch, who's going to lose out on the business deal. He is being hurt by this speech, by this description of him. So therefore, why is it justified? So it could be that this is about reading the pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim, which is one of the primary sources for the prohibition of Lashon Hara. There are many, but this is one of them. The pasuk reads, Lo selech Rachel b'amecha, lo samod al damreacha, ani Hashem. That we should not talk in a disparaging fashion. We shouldn't go around as a talebearer. But the same pasuk also tells us, Lo samod al damreacha, that we can't stand idly by when somebody is at risk of harm, of any kind of harm. It's not only the language of damriacha, meaning that they are at risk of being killed. It could mean any level, as the Rambam explains in Sefer HaMitzvos, any level of harm, whether it's physical harm, material harm, or spiritual harm. So we're obligated to speak up and to stop that harm. So the pasuk could be telling us that the two ideas have to be balanced against each other. That on the one hand, we shouldn't speak in a disparaging fashion. That can cause harm and problems for the people that we're speaking about. But at the same time, we have to defend those who are at risk, and we have to recognize the mandate of Lo samod al damriacha, and if that's the situation, so then indeed we will have to speak up. So it could be that what we have here is a balance between these two principles, which can sometimes cause attention to each other, and it's notable also, therefore, that the pasuk ends, Ani Hashem. This is what the Torah often tells us to remind us that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is watching, and we might think that we could do something and no one's going to realize that what we're doing is wrong. So here, this is perhaps an example that if we have to balance these two considerations, so it's easy to defend your behavior in either direction. You can speak out against someone and claim that you are motivated by toelas. You can fail to defend somebody who's vulnerable and claim that you were worried about the prohibition of Lashon Hara. But we are held responsible for the quality and the integrity of our judgment calls. And that's what we're reminded here. God is watching, and therefore we have to make judgment calls that are fair and that are appropriate. So in terms of assessing what exactly are the rules, so we have these various perspectives, the perspective of the Chafetz Chaim, that there are many different considerations, 5 or 7 considerations. We have the perspective of the Chazon Ish, that there is one. And there were others who fell somewhere in the middle. And among them was the Sefer Afikei Yam, Rabbi Chiel Michel Rabinowitz, who has in the beginning of his second volume a little Dvar Torah in which he notes that there are perhaps 3 principles of Toelas, and all of them can be derived from Yosef, working off the assumption that Yosef was indeed justified and that he was speaking for a purpose. So we can derive from the Psukim 3 principles that will tell us when indeed what we're saying is justified and necessary. So the first question he asks, and the first principle that he derives, is the understanding that Yosef was speaking here in order that his father should correct the behavior of the brothers and should set them straight, which is a form of toelas. We would otherwise perhaps think toelas is about warning victims about harm that's coming their way, but we can also find another form of toelas here, speaking to an authority figure in order to correct behavior that needs to be addressed. This is also a form of toelas. But one could ask, why didn't Yosef just speak to the brothers directly? If the brothers were indeed misbehaving, so why shouldn't he just be able to address them and not have to tell on them to their father? So here the Torah addresses this by telling us, essentially saying that they viewed him as a brat. They didn't think that he was worthy of paying attention to. They wouldn't listen to him. There was no possibility of him addressing them directly, and therefore he had no choice but to go to their fathers. So this, as the Afikei Yam, is principle one, that there has to be no other way of doing it, that the only way to accomplish the necessary goal is to engage in the speech. That is rule one, absolute necessity. A second rule he derives from the unusual language of the Torah here. There's so many words in Hebrew for speech, for telling, for relating, and yet the Torah has an unusual one, Vayave Yosef es dibasam ra el avihem, that Yosef brought their bad reports to the father. Why should it be phrased that way? Says the Afikei Yam, it's in order to convey the imagery here that when you pick up an item and you bring it to someone, so that item remains the exact same when you pick it up and when you present it. It doesn't change in the middle. And so too, Yosef conveying this information to their father was done through an act of bringing. There was no spin. There was no editorializing. There was nothing added. There was nothing taken away. All he was bringing to their father is exactly what he saw it at least, as he was able to understand it. And therefore, it didn't change in any way. It was similar to carrying an object, and this is principle two. Just the facts, there can't be any editorializing, there can't be any adding or taking away, but it must be simply that which happened, that which was seen, and that's rule number two. Rule number three, the Afik Eyam notes from another interesting word in the same pasuk, that the Torah concludes this pasuk by saying, El Avihem, he brought the reports to their father. And that's perhaps a surprising word, because he was Yosef's father also. So if someone gets into a fight with their brother, he doesn't say to him, I'm going to tell your father on you. He says, I'm going to tell daddy. I'm going to tell our father. Why does it say their father without noting that this was also Yosef's father? So it says the Afik Eyam, here's rule number three. And that is that there cannot be any ulterior motives mixed in their reporting here. And the Torah is emphasizing that when Yosef was conveying this report, he wasn't thinking at all about the fact that Yaakov was also his own father, and maybe he would score some extra points as the favorite son. All he was thinking about was the fact that Yaakov was the father of these boys, and by talking to him, he could have an influence on them. He would speak to them as their father. And therefore, says the Afik Eyam, this is rule number three, that there can't be any ulterior motives, that it must be simply motivated to LS without having any other factors mixed in. This is also one of the rules of the Chafetz Chaim, and it was actually one of the more controversial rules, because there were many who argued on this, because especially if we're dealing with a situation where you're going to protect someone from harm, if you may have some mixed motivation, that can't be a reason to hold back from protecting the innocent. How can we allow someone to say that just because I may have an ulterior motive, I'm not going to speak up when necessary? So there were many who argued with the Chafetz Chaim on this. They said it was comparable to saying that if somebody is sick and needs to eat on Yom Kippur, he can only eat if he doesn't like the food. But if he also likes the food, if there's any ulterior motive mixed in, then he won't be able to eat and save his life. That clearly can't be the case. So we have to assume that if it's necessary for protection, it should be permissible, even if there is a mixed motive. So this was a very controversial position of the Chafetz Chaim, similar to what the Afik Eyam is deriving here. There was an entire sefer, the Tochachos Chaim, that was written in order to defend the Chafetz Chaim on this point. And the objection is understandable, but presumably the Chafetz Chaim is also understanding that whatever mixed motive is there could also affect the decision itself as to whether Toelis actually is present. And presumably the Chafetz Chaim does understand, as is indicated by other places in the Sefer, that if the only way that one can protect the innocent is to speak up, even if they have mixed motives, so then they're going to have to do so. But he's perhaps telling us here that there is a need to do whatever possible in order to correct for that motive and to adjust for it to the extent that one can do so in order to make sure they're not inappropriately disparaging anyone. So this was a major discussion, how exactly to assess the process of Toelas and what steps have to be gone through. In the Saskama to the Sefer Tochos Chaim, it was written by Rishrayi Dabliski, who was a tremendous tzaddik who was very, very careful about Lashon Hara. So he discusses the conditions of the Chafetz Chaim, and he seems to suggest there that there will be situations where it won't be possible to protect the innocent if one is going to factor in all of the conditions of the Chafetz Chaim, and perhaps it could be understood that these conditions of the Chafetz Chaim are here as good faith rules to try to account for when possible, as a checklist to make sure one is doing everything possible to make sure that he is not saying anything that is unjustified and unnecessary while also protecting the innocent. And at the same time, to make sure that that goal is fulfilled, even if it's not necessarily possible to attend to all of these details. So this question of how rigorous a process is there, what kind of protocol is necessary in order to assess Lashon Hara L'Toelas, can go back to this question of how exactly do we understand the license of Toelas? Should we understand that it's simply not Lashon Hara at all, in which case there may be a much broader latitude given to one who is speaking for this purpose, and one could perhaps even speak not only to protect an innocent victim from a predator, but even to improve society, to go from good to better, because it's purposeful. While if we understand that it's really a tension between the Isser of Lashon Hara, which is overridden by the need to protect the vulnerable, Osam El Damriacha, but otherwise we're dealing still with a prohibition, so then we can understand why there may be a need for a more rigorous protocol and very careful analysis so as not to violate the prohibition of Lashon Hara without justification. One way or another, it does seem like the tension that emerged here between the jealousy of the brothers, perhaps pushed forward by the attitude of Yaakov in showing extra favor to Yosef, and Yosef's talking about them, whether or not it was justified, was a big contributor to the problems that followed. It's striking to note that Chazal tell us that some of the complaints that Yosef had about his brother, some of the accusations, could actually be explained in some ways that require some very unusual explanations involving the Sefer Yetzirah, involving creating things out of nothing, which itself would seem to be a pretty extreme situation, and perhaps the message there is that the effort to try to be dam l'chav schus, even going above and beyond the halachic requirement of that, is sometimes necessary in order to protect the harmony, in order to keep the peace, and indeed what's necessary in order to do that sometimes involves a little bit more attention. So the idea that Yaakov is criticized for his desire to sit b'shalva is perhaps understood here to say that had he been a little bit more assertive and more aware of the dissent that was taking place among his sons and his role in that, then perhaps he could have done more to protect genuine harmony, to make sure that there actually would be shalom, and the gullus that would have ensued wouldn't necessarily have had to take the same form.